Americans for the Arts.
Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lori. Coming up, we're going to hear about a free medical clinic that takes place this weekend that will serve more than 1,000 people who have dire medical needs. We're going to talk about that shortly. Also, one of Europe's enduring mysteries is the mystery of who killed Sweden's prime minister in 1986. We're going to talk about that, too, in just a few minutes. First, thanks to all those people that helped out during the WMNF fund drive that ended at 9 a.m. this morning. We raised more than $202,000 in exactly 7 days, and people are still calling in and also making contributions online. That's because our overall goal was $242,000, so we came up a bit short, but let me thank the people that have made donations online at WMNF.org in the last few minutes. Virginia McCollum, thank you from Bradenton. $120 contribution came in just a few minutes ago. Thank you, Virginia. And Albert Sanders made a $1,000 contribution. Albert, thank you for supporting In the Groove and all of WMNF. Albert is taking an event pass for two. That helps out a lot. And Christine Cooley from Tampa made a $120 contribution. Her favorite program, Traffic Jam. She's going to get a WMNF t-shirt for her kind donation. And Christine made two donations. And Suzanne Marks from Tampa loves all of WMNF, went to our tip jar. You can still make a contribution, help us reach the overall $242,000 goal. Jeff Stewart made his goal on the Wednesday morning show, but some of the other shows around the station have not reached their goal for the fund drive, including Democracy Now! So if you're a big fan of Democracy Now!, please make a contribution in our tip jar, which is at our website. Go to WMNF.org and help all the shows reach their goal for the fall fundraising drive. Well, you might have read the books, or you might have seen the movies. The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo was a huge hit both in the movie theaters and in the bookstores. Here's the trailer to the first film that came out. Let's listen to it.
She's one of the best investigators I have.
Babs?
She's different.
In what way?
In every way.
Something wrong with the report?
Anything you chose not to disclose.
He's clean, in my opinion. He's honest. Our credibility isn't dead yet.
Mine is.
He's had a long-standing sexual relationship with his co-editor of the magazine. Sometimes he pleasures her. Not often enough, in my opinion.
No, you're right not to include that. I need your help. You come stay on the island. A way of avoiding all those people you might want to avoid right now. You will be investigating thieves, misers, bullies, the most detestable collection of people that you will ever meet. My family.
Well, that was the beginning of the trailer for the first Girl with the Dragon Tattoo film. The film series and the books were huge hits for the author, Stieg Larsson. And Stieg Larsson unfortunately died before he saw his books being made into movies and before the books becoming million sellers around the world. But before he was a novelist, he was a journalist. Stieg Larsson was working for one of the important news organizations in Sweden. And he was also, as a sideline, investigating the assassination of Prime Minister Olof Palme, who died in Sweden in 1986 in a still unsolved assassination. Here's ITV's report on his assassination.
Swedish police have launched their biggest manhunt for the gunman who assassinated the country's prime minister late last night. Mr. Olof Palme was shot in the back while walking home unguarded with his wife after going to the cinema. Police now believe the same bullet that killed the prime minister grazed his wife. They say they don't suspect a political motive, but they have no strong clues to the killer's identity. They think it could be the work of a madman. Police cordoned off the area where Mr. Palmer and his wife Elizabeth were strolling when the assassin struck. Two eyewitnesses saw the killer, a man in his 30s, as he escaped down a side street. Mr. Palmer and his wife were taken to a nearby hospital in the city centre. But just before midnight, he was pronounced dead. Police have launched the biggest manhunt Sweden's ever seen, but so far they've no idea who the killer is or what his motive was. As news of the killing spread, ordinary people turned up at the scene of the assassination. The Swedes have been stunned by this, the first political murder in their country in modern times. Their leader had been acclaimed universally as a man of peace.
Well, that was ITV's report on the assassination of Swedish Prime Minister Olof Palme in February 28, 1986. The assassination and who was behind it, the mystery is still unsolved, but there may be a breakthrough. And right now we're going to talk with Jan Stoklasa, who's written a new book about Stieg Larsson's lost files and the hunt for an assassin. The book is called The Man Who Played with Fire. And in this interview that we're about to hear, we're going to hear that Jan Stoklasa, with the help of Stieg Larsson, who's now dead, and his lost files, may be on the brink of finding out who assassinated Prime Minister Palme. Jan Stoklasa, welcome to WMNF. Good to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
Let's talk about Prime Minister Palme for a moment. This is 1986 when he's killed. He is both an opponent of apartheid in South Africa, and he is also a leader in the world peace movement. And the U.S. was engaged in covert wars in Central America, especially in Nicaragua. And Palme was both an opponent of apartheid and an opponent of the U.S. secret wars.
Yeah, that's correct. That's what this was the end of the Cold War, the last intensive years, and Olof Palme had a lot of enemies inside Sweden and around the globe.
He was a social democrat. That means that he was on the left side of the spectrum. How was he considered in Sweden?
Well, he came from the upper class, so he moved from the right side to the left side, and that he was viewed as a traitor from the other camp. But he was also extremely intelligent, and when he spoke, he came out quite arrogant, so that meant that he was not very popular in the left camp either. So either you loved him or you hated him. That was he split the country.
What was he doing the night he died?
Well, he and his wife had decided that they would go to the movie theater, and in a quite naive way, in that period of time, he used to call off the bodyguards when he wanted to be like a normal citizen, and he believed that nothing will happen. That proved wrong, because he went to the movie theater, and after the movie ended, the couple walked quite a long building, and a couple of hundred yards later, a man stepped out from behind and shot one shot in the back of our prime minister, and before he fell to the ground, he was dead.
And was the murder weapon found?
No. Nothing forensic was ever found until very recently, actually. So they were only eyewitnesses, and very disparate also, so they were nothing really to go on.
What was the forensic evidence that was recently found?
And that's quite fascinating, because a few months ago I followed up on an old tip that I got, that there were a small group of young men at the time who found a walkie-talkie only 2 days after the murder, quite close to the murder scene. They didn't hand it in to the police because they were more into drinking beer and having fun. But I managed to track these guys down and check on their stories. And a few days later, we handed in the walkie-talkie to the police. And now the police have confirmed that they are looking into this quite seriously, including DNA checking. So for the first time in 3 decades, we have actually forensic evidence.
So the murderer was never found. The murderer of Prime Minister Palme was never found.
Well, they did find someone that they blamed, and he was actually convicted, but then on appeal, he was freed. But for 3 decades, our authorities have told us that he was guilty anyway. We just didn't find enough evidence. But recently, 2 years ago, the new DA said, no, that's not true. We apologize, and now we're looking into a conspiracy, an international conspiracy.
On the night that the Prime Minister was killed, what did his wife see and what did the eyewitnesses see in regard to the perpetrator, in regard to the person who fired the gun?
The wife was severely traumatized by the experience, and she believed to the end that she had seen the killer, but she died without a year ago, actually, without knowing who had killed her, her husband. So she was actually a victim in this case, as well as her husband.
And were there other eyewitnesses?
Oh, yeah. The place was actually selected in a very amateurish way. So there were actually 15 eyewitnesses very close to the killing, but none of them managed to see the actual face of the killer.
Were the Prime Minister and his wife, were they accompanied by anybody? Was there any mystery about the people around them immediately?
There were no bodyguards close at all to the killing, but there were many people and suspicious people around, and several of them have not been identified. So it's still a mystery who were actually really close to the killing.
Because at one point, were there people walking both in front and behind the Prime Minister and his wife in kind of an unusual way, that they were not part of a security detail?
Yeah, I love the way you come into the details. That's what happens to you when you start looking into the, you start seeing all the details. And just when, after walking from the cinema, there were actually two men walking in front of the couple that looked like they were from security detail, but they were not. And then another giant person walking behind. And these three people have not been identified. And that's just an example of the detail that you get caught by when you start looking into this case.
We're talking about the new book, The Man Who Played with Fire, with its author, Jan Stoklasa, and this is WMNF in Tampa. It's all about novelist Stieg Larsson's lost files and the hunt for the assassin of the Swedish Prime Minister, Olof Palme, and you're listening to WMNF in Tampa. So Stieg Larsson, before he became world famous, was tracking right-wing groups in Sweden, is that right?
Yeah, that was his life mission. He was actually, when he was in his late teens, he started mapping the right-wing networks and right-wing extremist networks of Sweden. And that's what he continued to do until he died when he was 50 years old by a heart attack. And then he only wrote the novels in the last 4 years of his life. But his second largest project was actually to try to solve the murder of our prime minister.
And you came across Stieg Larsson's files. How big was his file on the murder of Prime Minister Palme?
Well, I was actually doing research on a completely different book, so I didn't know very much about Stieg Larsson or about the murder of our prime minister. When I was in an archive and I found a paper that spoke about a middleman in the murder of Olof Palme. And then I asked the lady who had the archive who wrote this, and she said Stieg Larsson. And that was when my life changed for several years to come. A few months later, I had found his archive that was stacked away in cardboard boxes in a rented storage. And it was 20 cardboard boxes full of documents, his memos, letters, reports, confidential papers and everything. That was a fantastic moment.
Before he was a novelist, he was an illustrator for a traditional news journal. What I'm getting at is, was this quality information, the things that he took notes on about the assassination, did he seem to know what he was doing when it came to researching information?
You're right. He was an illustrator at the news agency of Sweden, the largest one, and he was. But he was an extremely diligent and thorough journalist. So he was still on the way of becoming a journalist. So when he was actually on the first day after the murder, he got the assignment to make a map of how the murder had escaped. That meant that he got all the information from all the reporters. They came to him with all the information they had. So he was one of the persons that knew the most already the first day after the murder.
Mm. And how did the murderer escape?
He shot two shots, one that killed the prime minister, one that just scratched the back of his wife. Then he stood for a couple of seconds, and then he ran into an alley, up some stairs, and that's the last thing that people have seen of him.
And did Stieg Larsson have a theory about where he went? I mean, the stairs are pretty steep, as I understand it. He had to be somewhat of a a good runner to climb all these stairs and get away so quickly.
Yeah, yeah. There are 89 steps up the stairs, and they're really steep, so you have to be pretty fit. But there's a lot of adrenaline if you kill someone also. So they could probably almost fly up the stairs. And what they didn't count on was probably how clumsy the Swedish police were. So I think they actually had quite good time to find him up the stairs, but they didn't.
And did Stig Larsson have an idea or have a theory about where this assassin went after he climbed the stairs?
Yeah, already in the map that he drew on the first day of after the murder, he actually drew the way that the murderer escaped. And that's where we later found a walkie-talkie that we handed in to the police.
Mm. We're talking with Jan Stuck-Lasse, and the book is The Man Who Played with Fire, Stig Larsson's Lost Files and the Hunt for an Assassin. And, of course, we're talking about the assassination of Swedish Prime Minister Olof Palme in 1986. The mystery of who killed him has never been solved, and this book might help solve the mystery. So that's what we're talking about here on WMNF in Tampa. You talked about the Swedish police investigation not being very good. I always assumed the Swedish police were pretty good. Why was the investigation not very good, and what did Stig think about the quality of the investigation?
Well, Olof Palme was supposedly too big for Sweden. He was our biggest statesman. And when he was murdered, the murder case was actually too big for the Swedish police. They're pretty good at solving regular killings. But this connected to a large-scale international conspiracy, that was something that they have never dealt with, so they didn't know how to do it, actually. So they started looking in the wrong direction, and that's what they continued to do until recently, when they actually said, we have been wrong, this is international. Stig was already into that. Only 1 year later, he started feeding information to the police, actually, saying that this is South Africa behind it, and they have been using a middleman in Cyprus, and actually named several individuals. So his thoughts of the Swedish police was actually, he didn't have very high esteem of them. But he even said that the secret police of Sweden, they're considered the bungling, retarded stepchild of Western intelligence. That's a quote of his, actually.
Mm. What did the Swedish police initially believe was the motive of the killer? What direction were they looking in initially?
Well, they were actually fed false information about the Kurdish liberation movement, who were quite present in Sweden at the time. So they got that information prior to the murder, the head of the investigation. So he led the investigation in the completely wrong direction for a full year. So we lost a full year. In the second year, Stig Larsson and others actually came with the information pointing at South Africa instead. And that's when they came the closest to solve the killing.
Did South Africa have a motive? This is the apartheid government in South Africa in 1986. Did they have a motive to hate or have some animosity toward Prime Minister Palme?
Well, Olof Palme, he spent his whole political life actually fighting the apartheid regime, which he thought was actually the last racist government remaining. And so he was actually definitely an opponent of the apartheid regime. But he was also trying to stop the weapon dealings that were going on at the time, what we call the Iran-Contra affair. It was much bigger, where South Africa was actually in a really important part of this.
How was South Africa tied into the Iran-Contra conspiracy or affair?
Well, you have William Casey, the head of the CIA, who was the architect behind the Iran-Contra scheme. And they were actually using several countries as transit countries to transport guns, but also oil. And the markup that they got, they used to finance the weapons, for instance, for the Contras in Nicaragua. And a big helper in this large-scale scheme was actually the South Africans. So William Casey personally visited South Africa many times, actually dealing with the government of the apartheid government of South Africa.
Was Prime Minister Palme critical of the CIA or the secret wars in Central America, especially in Nicaragua in the 1980s?
Olof Palme was, he was always fighting for the small countries of the world, Sweden being a small country, and he was also very supportive of the third world countries. So any small country that had a problem with one of the superpowers, either the USA or the Soviet Union, he would be on the side of the smaller country. He was on the side of Nicaragua also, and also some other countries where the U.S. or the Soviet Union had their interests.
Is there one piece of evidence that you could point to that says that based on both your research and that of your predecessor, of Stieg Larsson's research, points you in the direction of South Africa as being behind the assassination of Prime Minister Palme?
Well, I've gone to meet the people that Stieg Larsson pointed out in his papers, and when you read the book, I think you will have a pretty good picture that actually a couple of these people admit to that they have been part of this conspiracy.
And what did they say? Who, for instance, could you give us one example of what one person told you?
It's the master spy of South Africa is called Craig Williamson, and he, after our interview, he actually sent me an article describing how the South African government had gone about, what was their modus operandi when they were killing their opponents, and that's connected always to the weapon tradings, and they're using the same method where they actually use patsies, as they did in the case of Olof Palme, to carry out the killing. And that's one way how he showed that this is the way how we killed your prime minister.
So there was a decoy, somebody who supposedly was part of the assassination, a patsy, but was the patsy the person who was actually charged initially with the crime?
No, once again, they didn't count of the clumsiness of the Swedish police. So the patsies were actually not caught. In the end, the person that comes to the that we come to in the end of the book, where we carry out an undercover operation, that's one of the patsies that they were present at the scene of the murder.
Jan, the assassination of Prime Minister Palme, in what place does this stand in European thought these days, in terms of the mystery of who killed him? How big of an issue is the assassination of Olof Palme today in Europe? You know, over here we talk a lot about the JFK assassination, but how is the Palme assassination viewed in Europe?
Well, the comparison to the JFK assassination is definitely relevant. It's quiet for a while, and then it comes up again, and then it's quiet, and then it comes up maybe twice as much. And at present, we're at a peak, actually, because the police have gone out and said, no, it wasn't a lone killer, it was a conspiracy. So now everybody is looking even harder to where it was, and the police are actually looking into this, the theory that Stieg Larsson laid out already in 1987, and that I've taken further.
Do you think that the Swedish police are close to making an arrest?
I really would like to say yes, but the problem is that there are four police officers doing this, so we need some more skilled people to be able to deal with the world's largest murder investigation as it stands now. So they have asked for more personnel and got a no. When they will get 10 or maybe 15 people, they will be able to solve it within 1 or 2 years, and they're quite close already.
Jan, is there anything else you'd like to tell our audience here in the U.S. about this?
No, you should follow it on my webpage, www.stocklassa.com. That's STOCKLASSA. Or on Facebook, that's the same, Stocklassa. That's my writer's page. And soon you will know quite a lot more, because there are things happening all the time.
Jan, one last question. I don't know if you've ever heard of a former alleged CIA agent named Gene Chip Tatum. But I interviewed him years
ago. Yes, I did.
And I interviewed him years ago. He was on my radio show years ago, and he claimed that he had some connection to the Palme assassination. Did Tatum come up in your investigation?
It's definitely one of the things that I'm looking into. And he could actually have real information, but there are so many people saying similar things. I didn't include it in the book, but it's something that I would like to follow up on again. So you did an interview with him. That's great.
Yeah. It's online. I didn't meet him in person. I met his wife, but he was in jail here in Tampa. But the transcript is on something called the Leopold Report, and you can see the whole transcript of my interview with him.
Yeah, isn't that about the Swedish tree should fall? The information that came before the murder and everything. I think that's one of the quotes he said.
That might have been the quote. I'd have to go back and look at the interview, but that might have been one of the quotes. Anyway, well,
we should catch up on this.
Okay. Yeah. Well, Jan Stocklasa, thank you for coming on WMNF.
Thank you, Rob. Good being here.
That's Jan Stocklasa, who found the files of Stieg Larsson's investigation into the assassination of Swedish Prime Minister Olof Palme, and has continued the investigation and is now out with a new book called The Man Who Played with Fire. And you may remember Stieg Larsson. He's the guy that wrote the best-selling books, the Girl with the Dragon Tattoo books, and those books were million sellers and made into movies. In the book that Jan writes, he finds a woman who closely resembles Lisbeth Salander, the girl from the Dragon Tattoo heroine. The woman in the book is a Czech girl from an undercover operation that Jan uncovered, and it showed how this woman from Czechoslovakia used fake profiles on social media and computer hacking to investigate right-wing groups in Europe. So it's a fascinating mystery. Still no arrests in the murder of Olof Palme. But we'll keep on it. You're listening to WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. Our fund drive ended this morning at 9 o'clock. And thank you if you made a contribution during the last 7 days. We came up a bit short. Jeff Stewart's morning show did really well. But some of the other shows during the course of the week did not do so well, including Democracy Now. So we hope that fans of Democracy Now! And all the public affairs shows, we hope that if you miss the marathon, that you'll go to our homepage, WMNF.org, and make a contribution and help us get through the shortfall. Thanks to Anonymous in Tampa, just made a $40 contribution to Radioactivity. Thank you, Anonymous, for that. And Ruth McCullough from St. Petersburg went online and made a donation, $50 for the Acoustic Peace Club. So, Ruth, thank you very much for that. You can make your contribution at WMNF.org. And in just a moment, we're going to talk with somebody who will be in Bradenton on the weekend to provide medical care for people that cannot afford it or who haven't been to a doctor in years. You're listening to WMNF 88.5 FM. Some music from Oliver Mitikudzi. You're listening to WMNF in Tampa. Well, this weekend, for the fifth year in a row, the group Remote Area Medical will be in Bradenton to help people and serve people with things like dental cleanings, dental fillings, dental extractions, dental x-rays, eye exams, glaucoma examinations, women's health exams, and general medical treatment. This is a group that goes around the country. It's been in places like Texas and Virginia and South Dakota and Oklahoma and Ohio and Nevada and California and Tennessee and West Virginia and Louisiana, all over the country for the last several decades, providing free medical care for people. And they're coming back to Bradenton this weekend. They'll be at Manatee Technical College. And I spoke with Jeff Eastman, who is the head of Remote Area Medical, about their trip to Bradenton this weekend. Jeff Eastman, nice to have you on WMNF. Thank you for coming on.
Great. It's a pleasure to be here. We're having our clinic this weekend coming up down there in Bradenton at the Manatee Technical College. We've had that clinic for many years, and it's a pleasure and an honor to come down to Florida and help take care of neighbors helping neighbors.
So for folks that don't know, what is a remote area medical free clinic? What does it do?
Well, remote area medical free clinic, the first question people ask, what's remote about Bradenton? And when you take a look at it, people are remote from health care between the high deductibles, the cost. If they do save money to be able to have that dental procedure, that vision, that doctor's visit, they have to take time off from work. What Remote Area Medical, known as RAM, does is we bring a complete mobile medical, dental, and vision expedition right down there to Bradenton. We'll be setting up 60 dental chairs right there at the school, over five lanes of vision, plus dozens of medical providers. Patients will start lining up Friday in the parking lot. You know, it's a first-come, first-served basis. They'll start lining up. I believe we'll be opening up the parking lot at about midnight. The way it works is we'll be passing out numbers, first-come, first-served basis, to receive services. Around 3 a.m. in the morning, we'll start passing out the numbers. And at 6 o'clock in the morning, you'll be greeted by staff, volunteers, asking you just one question: where does it hurt? There's no ID required whatsoever, no referral. You just need to show up, and we'll help take care of you. One of the most amazing things is on the eye exams. You get a complete eye exam, pick out frames from hundreds of frames that are there, designer frames, and we make your glasses on site. So even though you may have missed that red light coming down that early that morning for that clinic, when you get ready to leave, we'll make sure you'll stop for it.
How many of these does RAM do a year across the U.S.?
Last year, we did over 60 across the United States, 85 total ones. We've grown from 2012, we were doing 12 expeditions total, to over 60 just right here in the United States. When you talk about need, last year there in Bradenton, we were just a few patients shy of serving 1,000 people and delivering over $450,000 worth of free care. We have a very small staff. This was achieved by over 700 volunteers. In fact, Dr. Richard Conard from right there in Bradenton, aligned with the Manatee Technical School, actually invited us down to Florida quite a few years ago and has been a catalyst helping RAM build capacity and deliver services to those areas. So once again, you know, without Dr. Richard Conard stepping up and saying, hey, we need some help, will you please come down here, we wouldn't be able to achieve what we do.
Well, we're talking with Jeff Eastman, who's with Remote Area Medical Free Clinic, and RAM, the RAM clinic will be at the Manatee Technical College this weekend, beginning Saturday, October 12th, and then continuing through Sunday, October 13th. So this is your fifth trip to Bradenton. You point out that 17% of the people in Bradenton live under the poverty line. Does this suggest that there is a huge unmet need, and that's why you have to keep coming back?
Well, the unmet need is across the board. This is your favorite waitress when you go to eat. It's that convenience store you stop at every morning. It's an individual that may work for the city and the county that has, they may have insurance, $2,500 deductible, but they don't have health care. Want to meet their needs. So it's not an indicator of the county, because we do these clinics from Bradenton to Orange County, California, one of the richest counties in the United States, throughout Appalachia, Texas border, also heading out to New Mexico. It's a status, unfortunately, of health care all across this great nation of ours.
And so people that have maybe problems with their eyes that they haven't taken care of, problems with their teeth that they haven't taken care of because their insurance doesn't cover it, or they don't have enough money to do it, they should show up. Women's health exams, and then general medical issues. If you haven't been able to afford to go to a doctor just to treat that pain in your side, this might be a way to get it looked at by a professional.
Yeah, absolutely. You can receive dental or vision, and you can always receive medical. We've got 60 dental chairs set up. Of all the clinics that we do, this is one of the highest capacity clinics that Remote Area Medical does. The volunteer dentists, hygienists, have really turned out in force to make a difference there in the community, coming together from all around the state to Bradenton to serve people.
How are you funded? I mean, you've got to set up the equipment. You've got to organize the volunteers. How are you funded?
Yeah, great question. RAM does not accept any or seek any government funding for our clinic operations. It's done completely by individual donors, some legacy giving, those people that want to make a difference beyond this lifetime for the rest of humanity, some corporate, some debt foundations, and some donor advised funds. If you'd like to make a donation to RAM, it's really simple. You can go to ramusa.org and just click on the donate button. We've also got some amazing videos of our founder, Stan Brock, who in 1985 started Remote Area Medical. Back when he was a young man in his teens in the 50s, he found himself in British Guiana down there on a cattle ranch and was seriously injured and found himself 26 days away from healthcare. After having an amazing career with Mutual Omaha's Wild Kingdom, movies, and flying aircraft all over the Western Hemisphere and beyond, he formed Remote Area Medical at the age of 49. When a significant number of us were thinking about retiring, Stan walked away from everything, dedicated the rest of his life to serving others, never drawing a salary, sleeping on a grass mat within the building, always caring about humanity.
Yeah, we were honored to have Stan on the radio station a few years ago when the first one in Bradenton took place. All right, so if I need some health care, or I need some dental care, I need some eye care, and I haven't been able to find any, and I'm in the Bradenton area, what should I be doing on Saturday if I want to go to the Remote Area Medical Free Clinic?
What you need to do is come on down late Friday when you get off work, or when the kids are finally home, you got somebody to watch them, drive on down from Tampa, say, Pete, come on down to Bradenton. There'd be a great group in the parking lot. Get in line. It's a first-come, first-served basis, and we've got a great group of volunteers that'll serve you when we're down there. So, you know, bring along some water, you know, if you can drink in the parking lot. Once you go through the clinic, we'll have snacks and stuff throughout the day for you. But please come on down. These volunteers have traveled from all over the United States to make a difference. It's neighbors helping neighbors, giving a hand up. You'll be welcomed at the door, and you'll be just amazed at the outpouring of caring and everything that you'll come across.
Well, Jeff Eastman, thanks a lot. Thanks for doing what you do, and thanks for telling us about Remote Area Medical.
Right. For any further information, go to ramusa.org, click on donate. And if you want to volunteer, just click on the volunteer button. It's an amazing journey if you decide to join us, and you don't have to be a medical professional. We need all kinds of volunteers to make this happen.
Jeff, thanks a lot.
Thank you, sir.
Well, that was Jeff Eastman with a nonprofit group called Remote Area Medical, and that group is coming to Bradenton this weekend. They'll be treating people on Saturday and Sunday of this weekend, and if you need medical care and you can't find any other way to get it, you can go to one of the RAM clinics this weekend in Bradenton. People will begin lining up at the Manatee Technical College in Bradenton at midnight on Friday night, and treatment will begin at 6 a.m. the following morning. So there's likely to be a big crowd there, and you can find out more at ramusa.org, or you can call them up at 865-579-1530. Well, you're listening to WMNF in Tampa. Again, thanks to everybody that donated during the fund drive that ended on time at 9 a.m. this morning. We came up a little bit short. We hope that we'll make up the difference over the next few days. We hope that you'll call us up at 813-238-8001 and make a contribution at our front desk, or go on our convenient website, go to WMNF.org and make a contribution there. And to help us stay on the air with your contribution, help us make the money that we need to cover our budget. By the way, this afternoon at 3:30 on the MNF News, Sean Canaan will have a report about the station's board of directors, which has just selected the new general manager for WMNF, and the announcement will be made this afternoon at 3:30 right here on WMNF. I'm Rob Lori. This is Radioactivity, and let's open up the phone lines, take some phone calls. Our phone number is 813-239-9663. Our email address is dj@wmnf.org. We can talk about the issues that I've been doing interviews about for the past few minutes. We can also talk about some of the other issues in the news. We heard about this. Turkey has launched a military operation against Kurdish fighters in northeastern Syria after U.S. forces pulled back from the area with a series of airstrikes hitting a town on Syria's northern border. This is from the Associated Press, and this is the latest news from Syria. The Turkish President Erdogan announced the start of the campaign, which followed an abrupt decision Sunday by U.S. President Trump that American troops would step aside to allow for the operation. Trump's move represented a shift in U.S. policy that essentially abandoned the Syrian Kurdish fighters who have been America's only allies on the ground in Syria. They were longtime U.S. allies in the fight against ISIS, the Islamic State group. I think we're kind of flying without a phone screener today. So our phone number is 813-239-9663. We're going to take these phone calls in just a moment so we can talk about the commencement of the Turkish military offensive against Kurdish fighters in Syria. What do you think about that? And also, of course, the big story from the last 24 hours, the White House declared yesterday it will halt any and all cooperation with what it termed the illegitimate impeachment probe by House Democrats, sharpening the constitutional clash between President Trump and Congress. Trump's attorneys sent a lengthy letter to House leaders yesterday, bluntly stating White House refusal to participate in the inquiry that was given a boost by last week's release of a whistleblower complaint that the president had sought political favors from Ukraine. So we could talk about that, too. Again, our phone number, 813-239-9663. Let's take some phone calls. Caller, you're on the air. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Yes, my name is Glenn. I'm calling from Bradenton, Florida. Good morning, Rob.
Hi, Glenn. What's up?
Well, I want to talk about remote area medical real quick. As a previous vice chair 5 years ago, I can't say enough about the organization. It's a great organization. I have two observations in the last 5 years I'd like to run by you. The first is we have tried, this clinic could be so much more successful if our legislation would allow dentists and doctors to cross state lines. Many, many other states have reciprocal agreements, and it's a travesty that the Dental Association has fought us for 5 years. And my second observation is, in 5 years, we have had a very, very successful model. And I understand for the life of me why there's not one in Orlando, Miami, Tampa, Jacksonville. I don't get it. I mean, if these people want to have Graham come down, all they have to do is look at our model. In 5 years, no other community has stepped up to the plate.
Glenn, so you're a volunteer with it. I think you were on the air with when Stan Brock was on the air a few years ago.
Yes, Dr. Connor.
And with the local doctor, Dr. Connor. Tell me, how many people show up for these? And you're an eyewitness to this. How big is the need? And if they're coming back every year, like I said to Mr. Eastman, the need has to be huge. How many people have you seen?
Well, we max out. What we do is we take the number of doctors and ophthalmologists and dentists, and we gauge how many patients they can see a day, and then we give out those many tickets. So 60 chairs, 10 patients, 8 patients a day, we can see 480 dental appointments, and those are the tickets we hand out.
And overall, are we talking about hundreds? Are we talking about thousands of people a weekend?
Thousands. We have yet to fail to turn people away.
Who comes? Jeff talked about this earlier, but who comes to these? When you look at the cars, when you look in the faces, in the eyes of the faces of people who come, tell me about the people who show up.
Well, basically, they're the blue collar workers, underinsured. You get single moms there with 3 kids. They can't even at Walmart fork out $200 for glasses. You know, they get in there, they get an appointment, we take care of the children, we grind the glasses on site, and in 2 hours, they're walking away with 3 sets of glasses and an eye exam.
That otherwise they would not be able to afford.
No. And our standard insurance policy is a travesty that they don't carry eyeglasses or dental. Most insurance policies don't.
Yeah. So my question, if the legislators aren't letting doctors and dentists cross the border to at least volunteer for a weekend in Bradenton, have you ever asked members of the legislative delegation there in Manatee County or Sarasota or Southern Hillsborough to come and view what happens at one of these RAM clinics?
Oh, yes. Our commissioner, Bill Whitmore, has volunteered. Other commissioners.
But what about members of the legislature?
Haven't really seen a lot of them. You know, we Dr. Conard and I have been up to Tallahassee, you know, promoting for cross state lines, and there's just so much pushback from the local organizations that they don't allow it. And the fact of the matter is their argument is, look, you're going to steal our customers. Hello, they don't have any insurance to begin with. They probably can't afford to pay you. So who are we really stealing? I don't buy that for one second, Rob.
And we know that if mouth problems, if dental problems are not treated, it leads to greater health problems.
And death.
And death, yeah.
I mean, you go, you have a toothache now and you can't afford a dentist, guess where you go? You go to the emergency room, and they just gave you painkillers and they send you down the road. They don't fix the problem, they mask the pain. And that's not the proper way to go about dental.
So, Glenn, if people are listening and they have friends or family that need health care and the family and friends, their deductible is too high, or they don't have health insurance at all, and they're really at their wit's end because, you know, maybe a dental problem is hurting, or maybe it's a health issue that they've gone untreated for years, and they want to go to the RAM clinic this weekend in Bradenton. What's your best advice? And where is Manatee Technical College?
State Road 70, just west of I-75.
All right. And you expect a big crowd this weekend?
Sold out every weekend for the last 5 years. I would suggest this, that if they can get there, even as early as 4 o'clock in the afternoon on Friday, because we give out the tickets on how the vehicles are parked. So if you can get your vehicle there parked early, you know, and come back at midnight or 1 in the morning and be in your car when they give out the tickets, you're going to have a better shot of getting the services you need. And, again, we do this differently every day. So you get the dental one day, you have to come back the next day. You have to park again. You have to make sure you get another ticket.
All right. Well, Glenn, thanks a lot. Thanks for telling us more about the remote area medical.
Okay, Rob, thank you for all you do.
All right. Thanks, Glenn. Well, you're listening to WMNF in Tampa. We haven't opened up the phone lines in a few days, so we're opening up the phone lines now. And if there's some local issue that you'd like to talk about, call up 813-239-9663, and we can talk about the issue that's on your mind. Maybe there's something you want to comment on about starting of military attack by Turkey on the Kurds. We could talk about that. We can also talk about the White House being defiant against the impeachment inquiry in Washington, D.C. White House says the inquiry is illegitimate. And again, our phone number, 813-239-9663. And you can also send your email comment into dj@wmnf.org. Well, here's a donation that came in online. Margo, thank you. Margo Leiser from Bartow just made a $120 contribution. Her favorite show is The Freak Show. She's going to take a WMNF T-shirt, and she's going to help us get to that goal. Eventually, our $242,000 goal that we set for this fund drive, we've not met yet, so let's hope we can get it in the next few days. And Margo, you're one of the people that's going to help us be successful this year. And other people, if you haven't yet made a contribution to WMNF, we hope you go to WMNF.org online and make a contribution so this unique radio station can stay on the air and all the great programs that you hear here on WMNF can continue. Coming up at noon today, we'll hear the Midpoint program with NOLA. We'll get the NPR news just before that. You know, when I think about the U.S. and healthcare, and, you know, we hear sometimes people say that everybody has access to healthcare. When 1,000 people or so show up and get services from remote area medical, it would indicate to me that not everybody has access to healthcare, that some people just don't know where to go. This is a free service that travels around the country. The doctors are volunteered. They don't get paid. And they've been all over the country, in Kentucky and Louisiana and Tennessee and New Mexico. And just in the last year, Nevada, Alabama, Virginia, West Virginia, South Dakota, Oklahoma, just everywhere in the country. Everywhere, big crowds show up. This is, you may remember Wendell Potter, who was the whistleblower from inside the insurance industry. He saw one of these. He was working for one of the big insurance companies. And he was in eastern Tennessee. He was a healthcare executive up in the Northeast. And he came back to his home county in eastern Tennessee one time. And he was working for a private health insurance company and thinking everything's great. And he looked at the lines at one of these remote area medical clinics and thought, wow, a big group of people without healthcare in the U.S. And I'm flying around in a private jet, Wendell thought. And eating essentially off silver-plated or gold-plated utensils, he writes about in his first book. Pretty incredible. So he got a conscience because of it and became a whistleblower and said the health insurance industry really doesn't help people with health care. It's a barrier to health care in the country. And Wendell Potter now goes around the country making speeches. He's now with a business coalition for single payer. But it was one of these RAM clinics that got him started and made him change his mind about the what role private insurance plays in our society. Well, again, our phone number is 813-239-9663. Let's take another phone call. Caller, you're on the air. What's your name and where are you calling from? Oh, they dropped off. Okay. Yeah, we don't have a phone producer today. But if you want to call in or if you want to send in an email, you can send your email into dj@wmnf.org. We got another donation. This is really nice. Thanks to Nuala from Hudson, Nuala Butler. She says, I love the morning shows. And she says, Marcy is phenomenal, and they like the Acoustic Peace Club. She found MNF when she moved here in 1979. It's a life-altering radio station, she says. Thank you. I wish I could contribute more, but there you go. There's a $60 contribution to help the morning show on Tuesday. So, Nuala, thank you for that nice contribution. And Margaret and Bartow says she likes Randy's theme shows and the Lulus and Jeff's morning show and Chuck Core and the Blues show and the Freak show and Alvon. And they're excited about the new manager and the future of WMNF. So, Margaret, thanks for that $120 contribution. Let's take another phone call. Caller, you're on the air. What's your name and where are you calling from?
My name is Karen, and I'm calling from St. Petersburg.
Hi, thanks for calling. What's on your mind today?
I just wondered, I know that the gentleman is gone from the RAM project, but I have glaucoma, and there's this special this test that I do. I'm supposed to do every 3 months, and I can't afford to do it any longer, and I just wondered if they might be able to provide it.
Well, one way you can do it is to call them up at 865-579-1530.
Hold on just a moment, please.
Yep.
I have it with me, but I have my...
That's okay.
I live in my car now, so...
You're homeless.
Yes, I am.
Yeah.
All right. I'm sorry. What was that number?
Sure. The number is 865...
865, uh-huh.
579...
Okay.
1530.
And who is that? Is that the...
That's remote area
program.
Medical. Yeah. And I don't know, are you going to have enough gas to get down to Bradenton on the weekend?
I'm hoping to, yes.
Yeah.
I've asked for some help from one of my siblings, so I'm hoping that they can do that for me. So, anyway... Just didn't know, and it might help somebody else if you just put it on ear that, you know, that they can or cannot get those options, right? I mean, those tests. Because, I mean, I usually have to pay $175 for it every 3 months.
And you don't have that money?
I don't.
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry, don't mean to put the weight of my life on your shoulders. But I do believe we're all in this together. And I thank you so much and appreciate you for what you do at this station. It's something that helps keep me alive every day.
Sharon, I wish there was a way I could do more, but thank you for your call and good luck. I hope your siblings come through.
Thanks. Bye.
All right. Take care. Well, if you want to comment about today's show, you can call us up at 813-238-8001 and record your comment on extension 115. And we'll play those comments back tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock. Remember, we still need donations for the fund drive. You can go to WMNF.org and make a contribution there. NOLA is coming up next. This is WMNF, Tampa, St. Petersburg, Sarasota.